This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The McClatchy Company, which owns North Carolina's two largest newspapers, declared bankruptcy this month. The Raleigh News and Observer and Charlotte Observer, along with the Durham Herald Sun and dozens of other papers nationwide, are likely facing new management under a hedge fund. The news didn't come as a complete shock. It's part of a long trend in the newspaper business in the midst of a dramatic restructuring in the world of media. What does all this mean for the future of journalism and public accountability? Here to break down the news business is Penelope Muse Abernathy. Penny was an executive for the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. She now authors an annual report on expanding news deserts and is a professor of journalism and digital media economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and joins me again now. Penny, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
Tell us about this, the McClatchy bankruptcy. Now, what led to this?
Well, I think first it's instructive to look at what the difference is in bankruptcy. People say bankruptcy and it means two different things. Mm-hmm. One, it can mean you're selling off all your assets and shutting down. Or it can mean you're filing to reorganize. And in the case of McClatchy, they have both a huge debt as well as huge pension liabilities. And so they file for reorganization on the hope that the government will come in with their insurance fund and stabilize the pension fund.
Meanwhile, the under new management means a hedge fund.
Right.
So talk about what the likely new ownership is going to look like.
Well, I think what we can first say is I don't think there are going to be any noticeable changes right now. Immediately, based on what the actions of this hedge fund in the past, the ownership by hedge fund continues a trend that we saw beginning in the 1970s when pension funds, mutual funds, hedge funds started investing in publicly traded newspapers. The difference is somewhere about 2010. These hedge funds and pension funds got very frustrated with the return they were getting on their newspaper companies and decided, we can own a newspaper and we can run it better than the people that are running newspapers. And so they have moved in an aggressive way to buy and some of our largest newspaper chains.
Now, this might seem counterintuitive because back in the 1970s, as you said, when this was starting, the trend, newspapers were still in business. They were still the way most of us got our news. These days it's not. So someone would say to a hedge fund manager, what made you think a newspaper was a good investment in the first place?
Well, because if you manage a widget factory the way they had managed everything else and assume that you could do the same with a newspaper, it seemed like a no-brainer, right? It's just like you have to go in, you have to manage costs very carefully, and you one of the dings on hedge funds have been that they buy them, strip them, and flip them. But, you know, the price was so attractive to them, they said, gosh, we only have to pay two or three times annual earnings. We can see what we can do in a 2 or 3 year period.
Talk about that, because that marks a big change from the days when hedge funds first got into this business, right? Talk about that change.
Well, up until about 2008, if you wanted to buy a daily newspaper in a good market, you paid at least 13 times annual earnings. So if you think about it, if you were a chain or if you were a private individual, you made a commitment to that community for at least 14 years. So you came in. And even if you did cost cutting, you also realized you had to invest to grow your audience, to continue to get the business that you did. And after 2008, the combination of the internet siphoning off all the print advertising, first classified and then retail, and the combination of the Wall Street recession that hit Main Street, the price of newspapers dropped dramatically within a matter of months. So a number of newspapers like McClatchy that had bought the Knight Ridder chain in 2006, 2007, paid top dollar, and suddenly the newspapers they own were not worth the debt that they then owed. And at least McClatchy's been able to hold out as long as it had. Many other newspapers declared bankruptcy in 2010, 2011, and the hedge funds and private equity funds said, boy, this is too good an investment to pass up.
But it means that they have to disinvest in the business of news, right? I mean, that's where the costs are, the people, the investigative reporters, all that stuff. You can't try to turn a profit in 2 years and expect to do that on selling newspapers.
Well, let's think about this, too. If you are investing in a community for 13, 14 years, you're going to have some civic mission. If you're a private equity and a hedge fund, undoubtedly newspapers are just part of a bigger portfolio. And as a result, you manage the newspaper the same way you manage a financial services group, a private railroad, a golf course. You give them 2 to 3 years. You're a short-term investor. And so you just cut costs across the board. And let's face it, you don't have a civic mission. Your sole responsibility is to the shareholder.
So what does that mean in North Carolina? Talk about these changes now. You said this trend has been going on for a while. McClatchy has held out perhaps longest. What kind of consolidation have we seen over the past 10 years or so?
Well, we've seen two types of consolidation. First, we saw the entry of what I call a new media baron, which were the private equity and hedge funds. And what we're seeing now is a consolidation of the chains that were owned by hedge funds and private equity groups into the publicly traded groups. So the largest newspaper chain in the country now is the Gatehouse and Gannett merger, which happened right at the end of the last year. It's now called Gannett. But Gatehouse owned 400 papers in markets like North Carolina, including Fayetteville and Wilmington, before it merged with Gannett. They now own 600 papers. Wow. And it's managed by Fortress Investments, which is, of course, owned and operated by SoftBank in Japan. So 650 newspapers in one chain is almost unimaginable. Would have been unimaginable even 10 years ago here.
What impact is that having on journalism and local coverage?
Well, I think first there's a disconnect. I mean, we've historically thought about newspapers in this country as being community builders. One of the first things people who went west and established a town would do is set up a newspaper because that gave a community identity to it. So there's first and foremost, a lessening of the community. But secondly, it means we've really lost news. We've lost almost a quarter of our newspapers over the last 15 years. And we've lost half of our local journalists in newsrooms of that. So there is just, it's summed up best by saying we've seen a tremendous loss of local news.
And it felt most deeply in rural areas?
Well, we thought that at the beginning. It's been felt first in rural areas, but we see it in inner city neighborhoods. We see it in suburban towns on the fringe of old manufacturing cities. And I think there are two ways to look at it. There's the very local weekly paper that many people depended on to tell you what you shared in common with your neighbor. And then there are the regional or metro papers like the Charlotte Observer and the News and Observer, which have been so instrumental in this state in showing us how we are related to people we might not know we're related to in this state and share both the possibilities and the problems.
So where are people? I mean, we know where people are getting the news, right? I mean, through digital media, there's a lot of push through that. And of course, the big companies, the Facebooks and Googles, will tell you, look, we've got these anonymous, these completely independent algorithms. They are not politically biased, and that's how we feed news to people. What could be more unbiased than that?
Well, it's interesting. I think if you look at it, it's been kind of like the frog in boiling water. Somewhere around 2010, more people started getting their news online than from newspapers. We've seen that trend accelerate dramatically over the past decade. The Pew Research Center recently did a study and asked people, are you getting the local news you need that's very relevant to you? And half of people said no. They had noticed it had gone down, especially in recent years. But the problem is that most people are unaware of what's causing it, which is the economic situation facing newspapers especially, because they've typically been the prime, if not the sole source, of much of the contextual news that we get. For both a region and for a small community, 75% didn't realize the financial problems that were facing local newspapers. And only 15% had said they paid for a subscription in the past year. So there's been a general lack of awareness among the public about what's really going on and how the news has decreased.
How about the coverage itself, in terms of, and again, we're talking about public policy now and ways that we can hold public officials accountable. So we see this in elections, election coverage, and then things that matter to people about the way your wastewater treatment plant is being. Can we tell what kind of coverage is being lost and the impact that's having on the way news media and even reporters decide where they're going to go and where they're not going to go?
There's an interesting study done by a Stanford economist several years ago in which he looked at putting a price tag on the number of lives saved in environmental disasters averted, because of the great investigative work or contextual work done by papers like the Raleigh News and Observer on the hog farm industry, on trucking, by Charlotte on Brown Lung, all of which won Pulitzers or received national recognition for what they did, and also changed the course of what we did in terms of policy here in the U.S. And so that's what one of the things that's lost when you go from a newsroom like the Raleigh News and Observer from 250 down to about 60. You just don't have the reporters to do as many stories. And so we miss stories.
And the follow-up that, right. The big question is, we don't know what we don't know. For those of us who are used to newspapers and know exactly what you're talking about and notice it's not there, right. If you've grown up in a world where it's never been there, do you even complain? Do you even, protest and say, where's my coverage?
Well, I think it gets back. You do not know what you're missing.
Yeah.
I both the NNO and Charlotte were sacred in my house. My parents used them, the editorial page, for the recommendations and who they vetted. I mean, I don't know about you. I'm a North Carolinian. I think I'm pretty good at judging who should be governor. I'm not sure on the raft of judges that we have of what their track record is, and I sure don't know who should be the best agricultural secretary. So I depended on those two papers through their editorials, in addition to their reporting, to help me make an informed decision.
Penny Abernathy, Penelope Muse Abernathy, if you want to look her up, authors an annual report on expanding news deserts and is a professor of journalism and digital media economics at UNC Chapel Hill. Penny, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Same here.
You can find links to her reporting, by the way, and reports on news deserts at our website, stateofthings.org.